Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Parker Romain.
I'm George Chen.
And you're listening to SubDoc, a show where we discuss and dissect documentaries chosen by our guests from the worlds of comedy, film, television, and more.
On today's episode, we sat down with comedian, musician Nick Stargiou, better known as DJ Real.
Nick has performed at Comedy Central's Clusterfest, Outside Lands, SF Sketchfest, and has appeared on Viceland and CISO's The Comedy Show Show.
Nick was excited to talk about the 2005 documentary We Jam Econo. The doc follows founding bassist Mike Watt as he and others retell the story of his influential punk rock band, Minutemen.
The film has interviews and anecdotes from Ian McKay, Flea, Henry Rollins, Byron Coley, Raymond Pettibon, and many more.
The DVD of We Jam Econo is out of print from Plexifilm, but you can find it on YouTube.
And now, here's our talk with Nick. Hi, Nick.
We're just getting into it.
Yeah, we are.
Hey, Paco.
Hi, our guest, Nick Stargiou.
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 Yeah.
Stargiou?
Yeah.
Man. Don't Stargiou.
Let's not have a stargument about
it. Don't start this argument.
Look at that cat.
That's awesome.
Do you want to start this one?
Now, you guys both watched, I know we're here to talk about one documentary, but you guys both watched a documentary that I'm interested in.
What?
Last night.
The Jim Carrey, Andy Kaufman one.
Oh, Jim and Andy by Chris Smith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome doc.
Yeah.
Well,
you'll be able to see it on Netflix soon.
Yeah, because it started with the when that first started.
I know. I felt like I was at home.
Well, I looked at my friend. I said, pause it. I got to pee. It's pretty funny.
I just started peeing.
Yeah. It smelled that. It was warm and fuzzy.
Yeah.
Just like my hugs,
George. Did you know I was there?
No.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Not until you walked by.
Yeah.
And then I said, that's a Nick Stargiou.
Uh-huh.
That's a Nick Stargiou.
It's a gooey situation.
It's super gooey.
Is it good? Is it worth seeing?
It is worth seeing, yeah.
We're seeing on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, Jim Carrey is, he's such an icon for one, and he's super interesting. He's a super interesting person.
There were a lot of parallels between him and Andy as far as like the approval thing and
so many.
Like,
what about
there's a lot of
the father issue thing?
Sure.
It
was just rife with father issues. Like Andy Kaufman himself. And then, of course, Jim Carrey's dad thing. And then I'm sure Milos Forman's dad was weird.
At one point, Jim Carrey. So the entire time he is Andy Kaufman the entire time.
On set and off set.
Uh-huh. And Andy Kaufman's real dad is like talking to him like he's Andy. And Andy Kaufman's like stage dad, they're both in the same room and they're both. Like, it's so weird. He's like, they're having like an argument
while getting makeup.
While getting makeup, and
wow,
it gets so real. The makeup artist like
crying,
starts crying. She's like, it just
the father figures.
She's like, it just reminded me of my dad.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. It's a pretty intense situation.
Yeah,
But I had just watched Man on the Moon earlier that day to prepare for this doc. Then I smoked copious amounts of bowls. And then my buddy and I went to see it, and then watching Man on the Moon, then seeing Man on the Moon, the making of, with Jim Carrey narrating about himself, only playing Andy Kaufman and Tony Clifton on the set.
Right.
My head was spinning when I left.
I saw your head spinning as you were walking out of the theater.
Yeah, you did.
Super high, dude.
Super high. Yeah.
That's a formative movie for me.
Oh, for me too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you can do anything. That's when I was like, oh, you can do anything.
Hmm.
Weirdly, like
That was like when I started playing music. That was one of the things I'm like, I wanted to do a band that was like a hardcore band, but an Andy Kaufman hardcore band.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, I don't know what exactly that means, but then we watched that as a band and we're like, okay, so yeah, just throw the rules out. Break the fourth wall kind
of
stuff.
I'm guessing when that movie came out, a lot of people were like, I want to do the this of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's what I did for like music. You know, when I started doing the DJ Real Act back in the day, like I dressed up in different costumes and every costume was a different character and every song was a different character. And I didn't care if the audience liked it as long as I was enjoying it. And I had a friend in the audience with a camcorder who I was trying to make them laugh because of annoying the audience.
Mm. Right.
That's how the whole act started.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you ever do just straight stand-up?
No.
It's always been kind of the music.
Yeah.
One person sketch.
When thing. I started, it was just music, and then
right.
me announcing what the character was going to be
right.
for the song.
Yeah. Right.
And then the songs were about the character.
Bad jokes all up in your face.
Yeah.
I like, you were one of the first dude I booked for the Remain event.
Right? Was I? No.
No?
No, you were doing it for like years before you booked me.
Okay, never mind. Well, what year did you
all smoke weed before this interview? I would have taken
that. Well, but you, what year was, when did you start?
Well, I started the DJ Real Act in 2000 or 2001. And then when I moved to San Francisco in 2005, I was like still doing what I had been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in like 2006-ish or yeah, around there, Patrick Bulger, do you remember him?
I do remember
Things We Made.
Yeah, Things We Made.
I was at a Hotel Utah open
with
mic.
Jesse Fernandez.
And Paul Marino, yeah.
Right.
They were like, hey, you should do comedy sometime. And I was like, I don't know. I don't consider myself a comic. And then I did, they had a show at the Comedy Station, I think is what it was called. It was this place in the Tenderloin.
Oh, yeah, 50 Mason.
Yeah, right? It wasn't 50, it was a different spot.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they had me like headlining it, doing my songs.
Nice.
And I was like, felt really out of place and like I didn't belong.
Yeah.
And I felt like that for years until I started like morphing the act to be more comedic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, I liked the fact that you wore a lot of shirts.
Right.
I
had a suitcase.
You had a suitcase and the fairy thing.
The Flitter Fairy, yeah.
Was always one of my all-time favorites.
I think Nick and I, maybe we met. It was the first talkies, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time we actually met.
And was like, I on that show?
You were on the very first talkies.
Oh, that's cool.
Anna Saragina was like, you got to book this guy, DJ Real. It's insane. It's perfect for what this show is.
Mm.
And we were having a million technical problems. And I had to like, you had to teach me how to use the trackpad
on
the MacBook.
That's right.
And I'm sure you just were like, who is this fucking guy? I don't know him. He's a new comic. What is going on?
I was so used to doing shows and having to teach like people that were running the show how to do sound stuff.
Sure.
Like there'd be no sound guy and I'd be like, okay, well, I have these chords.
Let's
and like the show wouldn't have happened
if
I didn't have the chords.
I mean, The old talkies was like, I brought like a DI that I could stretch to the stage.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just like, plug in the DI.
It's amazing
that was so crazy.
How many times DI boxes have saved shows.
Yeah.
Because people be like, you got a DI box? Like, I don't know what that is.
I got one on me right now.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
I think this is actually like a good thing. The three of us all come from a music background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have a skill level. Like some people I've gone to like open mics, they don't know how to plug a mixer in.
Right.
They don't know how to like turn a PA on.
Yeah.
They don't know anything. I'm just like, I will help you with this part.
Yes.
That's all I can do.
We've also dealt with all the sound guy personalities
who are kind of
like 90% all the same guy.
They're all the
same
dude. This
like bitter dude.
Yeah, named Griffin.
Generally a dude. I mean, there's you know, ladies too, but generally there's a lot of dudes who like, named like Flash or Snake.
Like, Raccoon.
Yeah, they've all got some kind of name, weird name, and they have like a beef with you before you even start talking. They're like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
you
know? So many
Man,
beefs.
I remember just like being at doing shows at the Knockout, and it was just like...
Oh.
Something would be coming in like only in one speaker and like just like blasted. And then I realized at a certain point, this one guy, he literally was like just deaf in one ear. I'm like, oh. How are you the sound man? You're like deaf in one ear.
We had a CD release party at Cafe du Nord, and the sound guy refused to stop reading the newspaper. So he was supposed to be mixing us, and mm-hmm. he just could care. It was the last time I played in a band. Was
oh
that
my
night.
God.
He was reading the newspaper. He wouldn't mix us. He hated the band. The audience was...
This is the David Siegel situation?
Tartuffe.
Oh, okay, you were in Tartuffe?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really?
Paco's been around, huh?
Yeah, I've played in some
bands. I've heard that band, yeah.
Yeah, they're good. They were good, and they got better once I left.
Was that an accordion player in that band? Or am I thinking of a different band?
You're thinking of a different band. There's no accordion. I played keys. I played organ and Fender Rhodes and stuff, but that was the night. So it was raining. The audience was not there. The sound guy hated us.
Yeah.
And at the end, pushing my Fender Rhodes and this organ up this slick ramp while it was raining.
No.
And it was Lennon Studios. You remember Lennon Studios? Oh God. Everything just sucked about it. And I was like, I remember we got all the gear in, and I remember thinking, I'm done. I don't have to do this anymore. You know, like I can just be a comedian.
Your Rhodes is just sitting in your living room.
And now my Rhodes just sits
You were
in
doing
living.
Comedy too? At the
yeah,
same
I was
time?
Doing both. Yeah, yeah. I was. And that was after the Boneless Children Foundation.
Right.
And then I was like, fuck, all I need is a pen and a notebook. I don't need a fucking rig anymore.
Right. Yeah, man. That was a revelation. Well, like for us, it was a revelation. Nick still uses
still
a suitcase
up.
Of props.
But I. Luckily,
and has the longest. You need to sound check everything.
I know. It's so stupid. And I have to get there before the show and then stay till the end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a guy like Reggie Watts just has his little thing and he just walks up, plugs it in, and then walks off stage.
Happy mouth time, too. It's just like all from the fucking mouth, you know? You have the. Dude, I love that you have a kiwi.
An iwi?
Or iwi, I'm sorry. Yeah. I fucking love that. I wanted one of those so badly.
They're only $299 on Amazon. Or Sweetwater. Yeah.
I saw Michael Brecker play one.
In real life?
In real life.
That's why I bought it, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I saw... Well, I didn't see it in real life because I think he died before I even knew who he was.
Right.
But I saw a video of him playing it, and I was just looking up Michael Brecker videos, and he was playing like this really crazy... He was like doing... percussion on it, and then
I don't know if I know who Michael Brecker is.
He's a jazz sax player from.
Okay.
He was big in the 80s and 90s.
He played on like Steely Dan, stuff, and the
Pat
Brecker
Metheny.
Brothers,
Mike Brecker and his Randy Brecker, that dude, man, they smoked a lot of joints together. The trombone, right? He plays trombone. Randy
was it? I thought it was trumpet. Maybe it's trombone. You're probably right.
But
anyway.
I saw Michael Brecker play, and he pulled the iwi out, and I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever fucking seen in my life.
And back then, it was bigger. Like, bigger one.
Right. It was,
and
it was
he
like
has
the
all
guitar.
This weird stuff, like poking out of it and everything. Yeah. But yeah, it was he was playing some funky, like, really
He's
funky
a genius,
stuff.
Genius, man.
Yeah. So
speaking
that,
of funk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about We Jam Econo. Which I didn't realize. Do you guys know the origin of that?
What jamming econo means? I used to know.
It just means on the cheap.
There's a Watt vocabulary.
Right.
There's like a Watt, just Wattisms.
I think it's in the Mike Watt first solo album, the one that had like Eddie Vedder on it. There's like
Your
all
ball
of
hog
this,
or
like,
tugboat.
Yeah,
that
had
one?
Like a dictionary or something. Or had like. Some kind of
Spielin, the Thunderstick, all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, like they would not spend money on the road at all. Like,
oh
they
God, they're
they would
notoriously
just drink
cheap.
Mustard packets,
yeah.
and stuff like that. Yeah. Like they wouldn't stop. That, so they were jamming econo, like they were jamming cheap. They're
that was like the Black Flag SST style, just like living, like just like piling in a van and just like sleeping on each other for body warmth.
Like rats.
I didn't realize SST Records just started off just as Black Flag putting out their own stuff, and then they put the Minutemen out, their first record out. That's pretty cool.
Fucking everybody else.
Yeah.
It's insane.
After that, yeah.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's
who
insane.
Is on that.
But also, Greg Ginn has like a terrible reputation, and I'm sure like bands were not getting paid still. Like, those things were up to a few years ago. I think he's just still repressing all that stuff.
Is SST still an active label?
I don't think they put out anything new, but I think just in terms of catalog, there's always demand for those Black Flag records. There's always demands for those records. And maybe they were like bootlegs. I don't know. I think he just had all the parts and just kept going with it. But yeah, Greg Ginn is a very hated man in the punk scenes. Yeah.
When
SST was great. Yeah.
I actually ordered a Minutemen t-shirt off of the catalog that comes with the CD.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, back in the day. Because there was no internet. I don't think we had internet back
then. Right. You just sent a check in an envelope to a punk rock label hoping to get your t-shirt.
I was so excited.
Yeah.
Was it this Starting Fires? The Man Starts
Fires? Oh, What Makes a Man Start Fires?
Yeah, that was the shirt.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That to me is like the record that I know best of all the Minutemen stuff. That's the one I'm.
Double Nickel on the Dime is the one that I know.
That was my first one, introduction to them. Yeah.
So let me, for the people that are listening to this, let me just also reference the fact, like, it's this documentary, We Jam Econo. It's kind of hard to find. It's on YouTube. So you can watch the entire thing on YouTube. So go to YouTube. If you haven't seen it, type in We Jam Econo and you can watch it on YouTube. So it's pretty accessible. For people who are like, it's not on Netflix or Amazon, you can watch it for free on YouTube.
And it goes back to, sorry?
No, I was going to say the DVD, I looked on Amazon and it's like someone's selling it for like $89
or something. I saw the same thing.
Yeah,
and I was so like, crazy. So, I'm not going to get that.
I did a little digging around because there was this company called Plexifilm in the mid, early 2000s. And they put it out on DVD, and they went out of business a while ago. But that's also why we can't find Hell House anywhere.
Oh.
It's also, they did the Wilco documentary. And I don't know. Apparently, one of the people behind the company is the guy who made the Helvetica movie.
Oh, so that one's great. Have you seen Helvetica?
Yeah. No. Oh, that's so a good one.
Did you guys watch? Did you guys do an episode about Hell House already?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, God. We did one last year for Halloween. Yeah.
What is it? Super something funk machine or whatever? That one dude who's got the. See what I'm talking about? He's like spray painting the wall.
Oh yeah.
There's my website. The rave guy.
Groovadelic. Can't remember that.
I can't remember either. But yeah, there is like the rave guy who's just like. He's sort of like the informant, the cultural informant.
Right. He thinks he's like super
really
cool.
The black lights would have been over here.
Right.
He's like, I had 121 friends die from taking too much Molly. He's the guy that has all the like war stories.
Groovadelic funk machine or something.
Yeah.
Free Molly. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. The Plexifilm thing is a shame because I think that maybe the rights just end up like no one thought about. What was going to happen after the DVD? They didn't think about streaming.
Oh wow!
Or
that sucks. So, so Nick, why did you pick this doc?
I would say like the Minutemen is one of the first bands that I kind of got into because I had, I think a lot of people have either like an older brother or like an older person that passes down music, and it's like you should check this out. And there was this guy, Ted, who was dating my my cousin at the time, and he let me borrow this album. He's like, I think you'd really like this. And I loved it. I loved the fact that the songs were super short and they were funky, and there was a continuity, but everything kind of sounded different. You know, they had a lot of, it was just very versatile. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard anything like it before. I was used to whatever was, on the radio and stuff. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always like someone's boyfriend or brother or something, some older dude.
Yeah. And this band actually opened up a lot for me as musically. Like, I was like, oh, okay, so this band influenced like the Chili Peppers.
Right. And, so many people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sound, you hear the Minutemen, it's like that there are thousands of bands that came after. Well, it's also odd. This is something that always kind of freaks me out because like there were bands like Husker Du. In different areas of the country that also were developing the same kind of sound.
I never actually listened to them. I should check them out.
Oh, yeah.
Husker Du, yeah.
They're awesome.
Great. Yeah. I mean, there's actually a pretty good book about the American kind of the hardcore indie rock sort of beginnings era, which is called Our Band Could Be Your Life after one of their songs. It's Michael Azarod. So there's like every chapter is like that kind of like whatever the... the band, like it was, this chapter on Black Flag, chapter on Dinosaur Jr., chapter on Minutemen, and it just goes around like that. That's a pretty good resource. But yeah, it's also like pre-internet, like you had to find fanzines and mail order stuff. Or use college radio was the only other place you could really find a lot of this stuff.
I feel like pre-internet was more fun in finding things. There was more the sense of like hunting.
Yeah.
That you don't really, I mean, you get some of that now, but like going to a record store and being like, oh, this is cool. And,
yeah. I remember.
You can rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And also having like, you know, like listening parties where people would come over and bring albums that they discovered.
Right.
And just everyone taking a turn to go up to the turntable and putting the album on, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's how, like, I wrote down, like, Saccharine Trust, Dinosaur Jr., Bongwater, like, those kind of bands definitely were influenced by and were in that same kind of vein as
I mean, Saccharine Trust is in this film.
Like, yeah, they are.
Jack Brewer and Joe Baez are all over this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is Joe Baez in Saccharine Trust? I never listened to them.
Oh, they're awesome.
I only know him from the Mike Watt album, right? Because he's like on a couple of those songs.
He played live with him too. I saw him play live with Watt once. Actually, I saw Saccharine Trust last year with Mike Watt and the Second Men.
Oh, cool.
It was a show that Martin Wong put on. It's like a Save Chinatown music. It's like a fundraiser that they
do. It was in L.A.?
Yeah, in Chinatown. It's a school in Chinatown, and they're always doing these fundraisers to save the music program there. And like Martin ran Giant Robot magazine, so he like knows all these. He knows every like punk person from the last like 20 years in L.A.
Cool.
So yeah, I saw Watt. I met Xander Schloss. That was fun. I was like, okay, this guy is. I'm gonna meet everyone from Repo Man eventually. But yeah, no, I saw Saccharine Trust. They're pretty dope. I mean, like they got maybe like a younger drummer and bassist, but Joe Baeza and Jack Brewer are definitely in there.
Right.
Total weirdos.
Did you ever listen to the Meat Puppets?
I did. Well, not till like a couple like years later, actually. But yeah, I love the Meat Puppets. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all in that same kind of SST vein.
Yeah.
What is that sound? It's punk, funk, mathematical, like it's
angular.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the Meat Puppets are. I'm not super, super deep in the Meat Puppets. I think I was like more Minutemen, and then I came to Black Flag like much later.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people are like Black Flag first, and then all the other stuff. But
I feel the Meat Puppets kind of. If you like the Minutemen, you probably would like the Meat Puppets, at least some of the earlier
solos
stuff.
Yeah, a lot of solos.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Meat Puppets are definitely more psychedelic than the Minutemen. Yeah,
sure. But there was definitely some psychedelic stuff going down.
Absolutely.
And we used to sit there and like maybe play Smoke on the Water over and over again. It took about maybe two years before we figured that, you know, you have to tune together.
You know, the tuning the strings, they get tighter or looser. They said they didn't think it was a matter of tuning them. They just thought like some guys liked them loose and some guys liked them tight. They were just like, oh, I like mine tight. Oh, I like mine loose.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Having kind of taught myself to play guitar using tabs and stuff, like, how did they learn their... They didn't really go into how they really learned their instruments other than playing Smoke on the Water, like, a bunch of times, or playing the same songs, like, a bunch of times. How did they get to the point where they knew how to tune their instruments? Because they, like, in the studio, it sounds great.
Awesome.
You know? And even in the live recordings, like, you know, that they show, it's like, yeah, they sound good. And, like, they must have gotten... They hit, like, milestones. And in such a short period of time. Like,
yeah. Super short.
Yeah.
I don't know how they learned. They're obviously in tune.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's one of the things about Mike Watt's sound. It's so fat and round and in tune, you know?
And he uses it in a lot of ways, like, kind of like how Les Claypool uses it in, like, a melodic... A bass line. You're really chugging things along, but there's like a melodic thing happening. It's like two melodies happening.
I wonder if that goes back to like James Jamerson and Jaco, you know, like
right.
their influence. I wonder if Mike Watt was influenced by Jaco at all.
I don't know. I mean, the styles are definitely different, but like
different styles.
But I think, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
But when that
one good thing is you can ask Mike Watt anything and he'll write you back.
Yeah, we should. Because that's it. No one played like that.
Right.
At that time. Like with the bass that far out.
Right.
You know? I mean, not even like, we're talking about classic power trio kind of sound, but not even like Rush had a bass sound that far into the front.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was one of the reasons like that I started playing bass was because I heard the Minutemen, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think from the Minutemen, then I got into Primus like right after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a connection there.
Yeah. Those are heavy thumpers, man.
Yeah.
Like those cats, like they must have taped their fingers together and just flapping it.
Ugh.
I was surprised to see that is very sexual. I was surprised to see that Mike Watt played with a pick at one time. I didn't think he was.
Yeah, he started with a pick and then he moved to the fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was because I hate bass players that play with picks, man.
I have more, I don't know.
It's my hot take.
You have a different, like you get a different sound with it, you know? I think the ability to do both is cool. Yeah. Because how could he play some of the stuff that he played back in the day without a pick? Because I don't know. Some people use their first finger that just seems like you're destroying your finger.
Yeah. Fucking Chris Squire, man.
He had thick calluses for sure by the end of all that. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I like the pick sometimes. It just depends on like what music you got into first, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. I just like growing up, my brother's a great fucking bass player, and he's self-taught, and he'd just always be like, "No fucking picks." Like that was a big thing for him. Mike Watt was like one of his biggest influences.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So yeah. I actually told him we were doing this, and he just texted me and said. He's drinking with some friends, trading Mike Watt stories.
Oh, yeah! I really wanted to go see. There was a Mike Watt show. Was it in San Francisco, like 2 years ago or something? I really wanted to go. I think were they doing like Minutemen songs or something?
I don't know.
If it's Second Men, they do Minutemen songs, but he plays with a keyboardist, so it's really weird.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like some of the parts are on keyboard. It's very strange.
Weird. Huh. It's funny, the first note on my paper says tuning loose or tight.
Oh, yeah. Nice. That's such flat. A funny moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like that Jad Fair documentary.
Yeah.
The half Japanese.
Yeah.
The way they treat their strings. Yeah.
The band that would be king.
Yeah. They just are like, the fat strings make the low sounds.
Right.
The skinny strings make the high
sounds. Is that a band you ever got into?
Half Japanese? I don't know them, really.
You should check out Jad Fair.
Okay.
Knowing you, it seems like you would really like half Japanese.
Cool. I'll check them out.
I mean, they came
Maryland, is that right? Or Michigan?
Well, they started out in Michigan. My hometown of Coldwater, Michigan, which is a tiny little farm town, but then they moved to Maryland and then off to New York, and then they got involved with like Mo Tucker.
Shimmy Disc.
And Shimmy Disc.
Is this like No Wave era?
Kind of. They're kind of...
Yeah. They're not really in the No Wave camp because they're always like a little just like damaged kind of outsidery sounding stuff. Okay.
Very artsy, kind of Flaming Lips ish.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you go ahead. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So Minutemen was like a gateway for you to like it was at like Minutemen, then Primus, then you just kind of like opened up to all sorts of other stuff or
yeah, for sure. I think like one of the first actual rock albums I ever listened to, my dad, because I used to be solely hip hop. That was like the thing I was really into. Just from like, from fifth grade to like, I don't know, ninth grade or something. Mm-hmm. And one of the first rock albums I listened to was that I like, I was like, oh, I like this, is Yes's The Fragile album.
Amazing.
And like Rage Against the Machine, like, right? And then Weegee Americano, Double Nickels on the Dime, like was somebody that wasn't like a parental figure giving me something, and I was like, "Oh, this is really cool." And
then, yeah. Wait, you mentioned Fragile, yeah. Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember. So maybe I think Rage might have been like the crossover from like hip hop into crossover. Rock. Yeah. So maybe that's actually like the first like real rock album. But then my dad gave me the Yes album, which is kind of like, you know, a kind of bridge
rock.
Yeah,
you know, from rap rock into like classic rock, and
but with
people Bridget at all, I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's fine.
You can cut this whole section.
No, it's fine because it just it's a interesting jump from Fragile to Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah,
that's awesome. But there is a theme in that these cats all play really well. Like these are people who really play instruments very well.
And there's solos and and the Minutemen had solos in there. And
Did you gravitate to guitar? Was that your instrument?
My first instrument was bass because of Mike Watt and Les Claypool. Yeah.
Do you still play bass?
I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But I'm primarily like a guitar player. Yeah.
That makes sense. I remember, I think it was Sting or somebody said, like, all bass players should play guitar and guitarists don't necessarily have to play bass.
Right. Yeah.
Or something along those lines. I love the bass.
But what was your question, George? I totally spaced
out. Oh, I don't even know. It's just like, it wasn't more, it's less of a question, just like, for you, this band represents something as like a gateway drug into something else.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because I got like all of their catalog. It was like one of the first bands. It's like, I want to get every single one of this band's albums. And then I got like Firehose and
Iffin.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I love that album.
There was actually some I didn't even realize were out. And I discovered once the internet came out, I was like, oh yeah, I can get that.
Yeah.
And then, to be honest, like I wasn't, and I'm still not a huge fan of punk music. Which is funny. Cause I think these guys are categorized in that genre, but, most punk I can't really get into.
Right.
It's because this is a more musical. Is that why?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's just because the vocals don't like get aren't grating to
right.
me. Yeah.
Like the Dead Kennedys.
I like his voice, actually.
Oh, yeah. D Boone's voice.
Yeah, D Boone's voice. Yeah.
He's got a great voice. And like, they weren't like his lyrics were so weird and.
Very poetic.
Yeah. And sparse, and like everything was sparse about that band, even their liner notes and stuff, except for their music.
Right.
There was so many fills.
Right.
The Minutemen was all fills, man. It's like there was no space in their music.
And I think the lyrics really appealed to me. At the time, I was like, you know, in high school, writing poetry and stuff, and getting into, I used to do like poetry slamming back in the day.
No.
Oh, we have to play a clip.
No, definitely not.
Let's play a clip of Nick's.
But I would do like these like political, I had no clue what I was talking about, but I wanted to be like, you know, Zach De La Roca or whatever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just like, you know, fright the night with broken glass and bones. It's like, what does that even mean? What does it mean? I didn't know, but it sounded good, you know?
Where'd you grow up?
It was in Connecticut, New Britain, Connecticut.
That's a hot
man,
scene.
Lots of stuff happening there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Is that the place that has the crooked mayor? Or is that Hartford?
Hartford, I think.
Had the Italian...
Well, the governor... I think the governor had a... once I had left, there was something with the governor...
Connecticut's like kind of dirty politics.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why not?
It's close enough to Rhode Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
There's all kinds of shit going on there.
So in terms of this film, though, so did you see this when it came out, or did you get it on video later?
I think at one point it was on Netflix DVD. I think at one point.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and that's how I saw it. And I was just so excited to see footage of them.
Yeah.
What year did this come out? Was it 2005?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, like, no expense was spared to make this documentary.
It was so cheap looking.
And it's just fucking... Most of it's just him driving around in the van.
Right,
It's so awesome.
Or, like, sitting on the couch, like, here's the pile of albums that we did, and here's...
Oh, yeah. And like a Raymond Pettibone thing that's worth like $1 million now, just sitting on the couch next to him.
I know, that's insane. Painting. I think they might have rented a hotel room though for some of the interviews.
For the friend.
Oh yeah, there was the girl that hotel room. Yeah, actually, I knew Keith Chiron who produced this, and my sister went to high school with him and Tim Irwin, But I still was like watching this just now and being like, they could have spent a little. They could have spent like $5 on a tripod. That would have helped
right,
a lot.
Right.
The for me, what I think anchors this documentary down though is that early interview where the three of them are sitting in the sun and they're being interviewed. What is that for? Do you remember what? I don't remember
the
even,
footage.
Yeah, like what? I don't think they even mention what it's for.
It's on their I think they're on tour, and there's that great scene where he's playing with the puppy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But no, I mean, there's some credit at the end that says where some of the archival footage came from, like some club footage and stuff.
Because it's it's funny too because they make him sit in the sun,
right?
Which is like something you just usually you
Mike Watt is squint. Everyone's
just
squinting,
and just sweaty. Yeah. You know, D Boone is looking a little sweaty. And I love how like it doesn't seem like Mike Watt has forgotten anything.
Right.
He's like, this is the tree.
Yeah.
And he jumps out and he's like, Geronimo.
He still lives
in
Pedro.
Origin story
too. Yeah.
Does he really?
Yeah. I think he still lives in Pedro. Yeah.
Oh wow.
He's like Pedro for life.
Yeah, they have like their own slang.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that's so interesting.
That's that Southern California thing. That's Huntington Beach area? Where is that? Orange County? I don't even know.
I think Pedro is considered South Bay, which is different than Bay Area South Bay, which is where I'm from. But yeah, I think everything below, like towards Long Beach-ish a little bit. I'm not sure. I mean, I've been down here for a little while, but I never go to San Pedro. Like I've never had the call to go there.
They talk about going up to Hollywood and people coming down to San Pedro.
You could probably go like to Mike Watt's house and just knock on the door and say what's up. Probably, right?
I bet he's still driving.
Do you guys know that I recorded with Mike Watt before?
No.
I told you this story?
No.
So my band that I was in for a while, Kit, I don't know why, like the drummer, Vice, he just knows everyone. And
his name is Vice?
Vice Cooler, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He just played with the Raincoats in New York at that show where Bikini Kill, like three quarters of Bikini Kill, got to get back together.
Crazy.
Just the other day. He knew Watt for some reason. He just knows everyone. Like, he had, like, Kim Gordon and Thurston Moore play his birthday party before, so he just knows people.
Hmm.
And we were like, we had to make this record for some reason. Actually, you know what? I don't think we had to make a record. It was just like, hey, I asked Watt if he would play with us. We want to just have him jam on this recording, and we didn't even have enough songs. We had to like kind of replay old songs and just like met up with Watt in the studio in Oakland. And
whoa,
he had never heard the songs before. And he's just like, I'm just here to do whatever you guys want. And
we're
just like, just fucking rip it like over. And then we'll just overdub all the parts that we like together. And then we went out and had Indian food with him afterward. And he just had his
wisdom. Did he get paid for his
wisdom.
Time?
We did not pay. I think we bought him Indian food. I think
that
was how he
got
paid
crazy.
For that. Yeah, he was in the Bay for something. Like he was playing in, I think, this group called like Banyan or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like I met him maybe one or two other times. I saw Dose play before. That's actually a great band. His band with Kira,
Rossler.
It's just bass duets, and they both sing. Yeah,
whoa.
It's pretty awesome. And they used to be married. She's in the documentary briefly. But she was a Black Flag bassist. Yeah. So, yeah, I have jammed with Watt. I wish it had turned out better. I think I was out of tune the whole
time. Were either you guys in a band that kind of sounded like the Minutemen? Were you guys ever in one of those kind of...
When I was in high school, I tried to get... So the drummer could do some of the stuff that Hurley could do. Like, not as well, but he was pretty good for his age. And I wrote some stuff on bass that sounded kind of Mike Watt-ish, but we never like played a show or anything.
Got it.
I covered Joe McCarthy's Ghost in a band one time, but it was like we were just a indie pop band, but I'm just like, I really want to cover this song.
That's fun.
I have it on cassette somewhere. I'm
that's
like,
fun.
I got to check it out and see if it's
worth
sharing.
Were you guys ever in power
sharing.
Trios?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best. I love power trios.
I don't know how you define a power trio.
Three people.
Well, okay. Right now that I'm in a power trio.
Oh, okay. Rock and roll.
So if there's six people in the band.
It's a power triad.
Sextet.
Sextet. Yeah. I think that's like one of my favorite configurations of rock and roll band.
Sure.
Just fucking three people. The three.
Primus.
Yeah.
Minutemen.
Rush. Jawbreaker. Yeah.
There's so many great power trios, man.
Was put the Police? Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Police. A trio.
Yeah. That's they're one of the
Destiny's Child.
Absolutely. TLC.
Yep.
So many great Boys to Men. So many great power trios. If I just think in all seriousness, the Minutemen should always be mentioned when they talk about great power trios.
I agree.
Because they don't, you never hear anyone bring them up.
It was really cool to see like all those punk artists talk about how hearing even the first album like was like nothing that they were like, this is amazing. Like, yeah. I loved hearing them talk about it.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Ian MacKaye or Rollins or, yeah.
Yeah. It was just really, I don't know.
No, it's awesome. I agree because you don't hear they weren't around that long. So, right. You know, a lot of times I think they get kind of skipped over because D. Boone died so young, right. You know?
Yeah.
How old was he when he died? Do you know?
25, 26.
Pretty young.
I'm making very that young. Up, but I think in his 20s.
Like, it's so crazy because, like, in my head, he's older than me.
Of course, yeah.
You know?
Because you're a kid when you...
You're right.
Yeah, me too.
We saw a lot of rock concerts, you know, big shows for him, the California Jam. We used to go all the time, and we were under the impression you had to be part of the special elite to do music. The other way, it was like models, you know, you just learned that song somehow in the bedroom, you played it, and you got joy out of it. We didn't think you could actually do them in front of the people.
We never thought
when we saw these other lame dudes doing it. You know, we thought, whoa, that's not the point. The point is just trying to get away with whatever you can. You don't have to be part of any machine. Except maybe your own.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS or play online via Facebook games.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So what got you guys into the Minutemen? Like, what...
From my older brother, same.
Your older brother,
same,
interesting.
The exact same story you were just telling me. Yeah. My brother gave me a EP, a Minutemen EP, and I was like, he was like 2 weeks later for my birthday. I think my like 16th birthday.
Was this a vinyl?
Vinyl.
Wow.
Yeah. There's no CDs at this point, but he gave me an album, and he was like, "What'd you think?" And I was like, "It's fucking horrible. I hate it. It sucks, and I don't like it." And then he was like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "It seems like it's something you would enjoy." And I was like, "No, it fucking sucks. It's too slow." And he's like, "It's too slow." And he's like, "You're playing it on 45, right?" And I was like, "No, I'm not. I didn't realize it was a 45.
Oh my God.
And then I put it on the right speed and I was like, "Yeah."
Were you listening to all your music like that then?
Pretty much.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny. So what was the music you liked at that speed?
Well, I mean, like, I was playing 33. I was playing like...
Oh, the size of the disc, of the vinyl.
Right. He gave me like...
Because it was an EP.
Right.
I see.
Yeah, I just was putting it... I didn't put it on the right speed.
That's so funny.
And it was like... You know? Like, this isn't very good. It'd
still
good.
Be pretty fast. The Minutemen at 33 would still be kind of fast.
Exactly.
I think for me, actually, weirdly, it does connect to this film because I think it was maybe hearing Firehose on MTV... And then there was these skater kids who went to Leland High School in San Jose, and they were all into these SST bands, like including like Sonic Youth and all this other stuff. I think I found it through that, and one of the people that was in that crew, I don't know if he was a skater, but Keith Sharon, who produced this movie, was an early guy who was just into the Minutemen, and he ran the radio station. He ended up running the Santa Clara University station later, and he was just a friend of ours. My sister went to that school, and him and Tim Irwin produced this movie. Like, I don't know where the initial footage started for this. It seems like they're matching footage from all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, you can tell, like, it's like early 2000s. It is before DV, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
The camera work is like, it seems like, you know, consumer grade camera.
Yes.
Maybe like high eight or something that they're doing a lot of these interviews on. But I remember watching this in a theater, and I think they took out a scene. I remember a scene that was like, they showed it at Yerba Buena. They kind of toured with it, and maybe they cut it out. There was a scene where it just was like interviewing a guy on top of a hill, and it was just like so windy that you couldn't really make out half of what he was saying. I think it got maybe taken out of this cut that's in this version.
I think the vibe of the documentary fits with the Minutemen vibe, actually.
Yes. Econo. Very Econo. Yeah.
It is very. Is George Hurley in Oakland when they're interviewing him?
I think so. Oh, yeah, that backdrop. I know. Yeah. I think that's the thing is, like, he might be in Pedro too, because it's like a harbor town. That's like all the nautical theme stuff in their stuff. And also, like, I think Watt did this record about, like, his dad being a military, like, seaman and stuff. So they're really part of the lingo, I think, is all like seafaring military stuff, because it's like a harbor town.
There's Brave Captain, that song, but that's a Firehose song. But still, mm-hmm.
That's a great tune.
If I need, like I'm kind of tired and I have to go do a show, I'll put on Brave Captain and just be like, by the time I get to the show, I'm just like,
amped up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Ed has such a different voice than D Boone does.
But it's a perfect match. It's like, how did they do that twice?
Right.
How did Mike Wilde pull that off twice?
Do you know the story of that, though?
I know
the story of Firehouse?
Oh, wait, he was just a big, tell it anyways.
He's a huge fan, and then he did what you're talking about. Like, I think he just went and found them and was like, hey, I got to start a band with you guys. And like not that long after D Boone died. They were both, I think, like, Watt was super depressed.
Right.
And basically, Firehose was like his therapy, like, recovery from that.
Well, so D Boone, I think, died in 84?
85. December, they said,
And then Firehose started in like 86 or something, right?
It's
like
pretty soon after.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I mean, it's kind of like when we're talking about Metallica the other day, like, you know, Cliff Burton dying. And then they had all this stuff they had to do, and they just held auditions, and they got new stuff.
You mean when we were talking to Dana Gould about...
Yeah, you know, just some guy that we're talking to about Metallica.
We never put this out, but I found this picture online. Do you know the Metallica story?
Oh, yeah. Which one?
Well, just the
documentary?
Well, there's some kind of monster, but the origin, like, they had an original bass player.
Oh, yeah, Cliff Burton.
Cliff Burton, right.
Yeah.
So I found this picture. It's Lars and Cliff with their arms around each other, and this guy's wearing it at a record store, and it says, it should have been Lars.
Oh.
Was the caption of the t-shirt. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
It's like an actual t-shirt.
And they auditioned like Les Claypool, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
I remember that story too.
Mm-hmm.
How funny that was.
I'm surprised he did not get that gig. Yeah. I don't know.
He's probably a little too weird for those guys. They seem kind of bro-ish, kind of more like, drink, you know? I don't know. Les seems less... Whoa. Let's just leave it there. Less seems less, dude. Did you guys ever listen to Mr. Bungle?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I can't say that I liked it. I have heard it, though. I'm not a Bungle. There's like a world of... I think I liked Primus for a little bit, but like I never got into Bungle.
Mm-hmm. I think the second album's a little more accessible. Or no, the third album, the California.
Oh, yeah.
That album's a little more accessible, but... Yeah. I loved that stuff.
I mean,
it's definitely too. I mean, it comes from this I think this is part of the lineage, is that the term?
Uh-huh.
It's definitely
It
stems back to this.
It's all part of the tree.
Yeah.
It's funny how you were like, it's like you can hear it in the Red Hot Chili Peppers and like, well, the lyrics of Anthony Kiedis are so different than those of D Boone's.
But they're poetic, like, man. Yeah. They're poetry, dude.
And like California. If D Boone had lived and gone the direction of Californication.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was thinking like what would the band sound like because they had so many phases, right? In such a short period of time, like if he was still around, what would that what would it sound like if the Minutemen was still around?
You know, it's hard to know with these things, right? Like, it's sort of like, what would Kurt Cobain in his 50s have been like? Would he just have been like, I'm doing a Jack in Box commercial? Like, unlikely, but, you know.
I think he'd probably gone the way of Eddie Vedder, just doing, like, cool projects and taking his shirt off once in a while.
Soundtracks,
yeah. He could see him producing really cool bands coming out of the Pacific Northwest, you know. Doing shit like that.
Yeah. I mean, Watt has just kind of stayed the course this whole time. It's hard to know what he would have done.
God bless those kind of guys, man. Where he's like, I do one thing, I play bass and I do it well, and I like this kind of music, you know?
Yeah.
I almost think D. Boone might have become like an academic or like like a activist or a politician or something. Because that was like when another key thing about them was like they were just going, they were like talking about like Latin American dictators and things. They were like getting
Vietnam War stuff
specificity. Yeah. And like that, I think that was a side that came, that was mostly D. Boone, because like Watt's stuff is more like the poetic, like everyman stuff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, and what was D's first name?
Dennis.
That sounds right.
But they spell it kind of weird, like D-E-N-N-E-S.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I was thinking of Gang of Four. I mean, that's the other band that's the most like Minutemen in the sense that it's like, oh, you would like Gang of Four because they were British. They were like really political lyrics, really that really jaggedy guitar sound married to like this idea of like, oh, we're going to do kind of like take some element of funk and then just make it super angular and jagged and then have a political thing. They don't mention that so much. They talk to someone from Wire, I think Colin Newman from Wire gets brought in, and like Minor Threat covered Wire.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, check out some Wire stuff too, yeah.
Yeah, Wire, early Wire is great. Wire goes all over the place. But yeah, the early Wire records, Pink Flag. And Gang of Four, I think, is like probably the only analogous band. Gang of Four is pretty influential in a different way than Minutemen were, because I feel like, remember like the early 2000s, like the whole New York dance punk kind of like those bass lines and everything? That's all Gang of Four. But no one really took the Minutemen part of it. Like the
There's no jagged means no.
Yeah,
they're kind of similar, proggy. Right?
Yeah, like sort of like punk proggy stuff. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, Gang of Four had that same kind of Minutemen sound. Before we started recording, Nick and I were talking, and it's like that heavy 1-2 blah, 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 boom, boom, blah, 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 kind of stuff. Yeah. You know?
But then Gang of Four went new wave. Like they fully did their new wave record, and like Minutemen was so American DIY was like, I mean, like Gang of Four is still like on a record label, like a major record label.
Right.
Like part of the whole Minutemen aesthetic, and it's tied into the whole SST thing and like
super
just like grimy dudes just
super like, grimy.
Grinding it out, yeah.
But also extremely smart and artistic in the same. Mm-hmm. It's that weird Americana small town thing. You find it all over this fucking country. Like when I used to tour, we'd go to these small towns and you'd find these fucking wiry, grimy dudes that you would go back to their fucking farmhouse and smoke weed and shoot guns. And they're so smart, you know, and they would turn you on to the best books and the best albums and just have these great conversations with them. It's like,
dude, did you listen to S-Town? It's like you're reminding me of that dude from S-Town. S-Town.
right.
Like, this guy who's like a genius and lives in this tiny town and is just like, I hate everyone here.
This country's full of those small towns, full of these small town, like country philosopher types that are, I find just so fucking intriguing. That's also like one of my favorite kinds of genres of documentaries is that slice of Americana types, you know, where you have, it's like these small little farm towns, you have this guy in his garage just fucking waxing poetic and you're like, Jesus Christ, you're fucking a genius, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could think of Watt as one of those types of
people. Yeah, and D. Boone too. I don't know if Hurley comes across like that, but definitely D. Boone and Mike Watt do.
Hurley comes off like a drummer, man. I don't know what to say about his mentality.
What does he do now? What bands is he playing in?
I think they still play together occasionally. Those guys will play together once in a while. But I think he probably just has like just some side gigs. I don't know.
You know, I have to, I don't even know if you know this, George, but originally, or maybe I shared this with you, maybe I didn't, I don't know, but I wanted our logo to look like Buzz or Howl.
Oh, wow.
You did mention that at one point.
Okay, like my profile and your profile.
Like kind of screaming at each other.
Why don't we just do it for this episode? I'll draw one for this episode.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, you're an artist.
Yeah.
And you have to put Nick in there. Because there's all that
fro.
Shit.
You're like,
put Nick's fro falling between our faces.
Okay.
Because there's all that shit between their faces.
You both have to send me good profile photos. That's all I need. And we'll
super
do it for
gross.
This one episode. I'm going to do so much work for this one episode.
Yeah. Buzz or Howl under the influence of SupDoc.
And like, I actually, in this doc, one of the things I learned was that that was Joe Baez's drawing and that it wasn't a Pettibone drawing.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a Pettibone. And also some of D. Boone's art is all over that stuff. I didn't realize he did drawing as well.
He was a good artist,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
The one where he was at work and they were talking about like, you have to take lunch. And, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what boredom can do, man. I wonder, like, this is so old guy. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to ask this question, but I'm going to.
It's on brand.
Yes, it is on brand. Having PlayStations and Xboxes and having super HD television, like, it just doesn't, like, the boredom of the American teenager, which I guess still fucking exists, but it spurred so much creativity.
Sure.
You know, like, so it just makes me think, like, is there a diminishing creative boredom?
I mean, like, that's, you had like this moment
not
of, like,
with YouTube just happening.
Yeah. Or Vine. It's a different, like, all that stuff that happened on Vine.
Okay.
People are still figuring it out, just in a different way.
And there is a moment, actually, now I think about it, where Mike Watch driving that fucking van and he talks about, like, kids these days have it easier
to be
in a band.
Right.
It's so much easier now.
You can make an album in your room and not even need another band member.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's.
When they said they made Buzzer Howl for $50 because they told the guy that the one song, three songs were actually one song.
Yeah. For the compilation or whatever.
Oh, man.
Oh, well, and then, who did they, was it Husker Du that was coming out with a double album?
Yeah, Zen Arcade.
Yeah, Zen Arcade. Oh, that's such a good fucking album.
I haven't heard that.
And then they just got competitive and they're just like, oh, we'll do one too.
Yeah.
Well, then they wrote like 20 songs in a week or something crazy.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
And I like, because George Hurley is like, it took we wrote 20 songs in it took a long time. It was like 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks. Yeah. I wish there was like recordings of them. There has to be something where they were like sitting
practice
there
tapes.
And coming up with the stuff so they can remember like what the songs.
You're right. Yeah.
How they, like, what was this? Because Mike Watt would come up with a bass line, and then D. Boone would come up with something that complemented it, right? That's what he was saying. He'd like, it was just like really easy for him to do that. But like, how did George Hurley fit in the mix? Like, would it be like a thing? Maybe sometimes he would come up with a cool drum beat, and then
I have no idea.
I really wish I could see how it worked.
That's a good point, because like he said, he's like, we had to remember fucking.
There's so many songs.
40 some songs.
Yeah.
I have not, like, even when I was doing a lot of music, I was not writing, like, even a song a week. That's just insane.
There's so many riffs and fills and, like.
Oh, my God, there's so much. And it's so tight.
Yeah.
Like, they would have to rehearse, but they fucking clicked, man. That's that energy, that's that, like, that kismet spirit that they're talking, a lot of these guys are talking about. It's like, you can only have that if you went from third grade to senior year of high school with somebody.
Yeah. Nick, did you have a bandmate early on? Someone that you was like your kind of like brother in arms?
Yeah, I think when I was like 15, there was this guy Rob who
fucking Rob, dude.
Yeah,
it's always Rob.
15 or 16, yeah, and he was a better guitar player than me because I was more of a bass player, but I tried to play guitar, and so I played bass, he played guitar. We would play Metallica tunes and then try to play like Minuteman song, and. I actually like learned a lot from him. And then I was, the next band I was in was this band, prog rock band called Karma.
Yeah. Was the K backwards and like,
no, but
an umlaut over the R.
But there's there was a guy in that band too, who I'm still like best friends with today, who I consider to be like that, who just like,
right.
We're always sending each other new songs we're working on. And,
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Dude, yeah. Collaborating, having a partner in crime when you collaborate is essential.
Yeah.
To learn from and to just bounce fucking shit off.
It's fun to be a slightly competitive in that, like, well, that's, you know, being inspired by what the person's doing and then coming up with something new based on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was thinking you and Drennan. That's like,
oh, sure.
Like
there's that too. Yeah. Thing.
Yeah. Your collaboration with Drennan, man.
Sure.
Yeah.
That was like Davis, some of the most fun, like when we were, you know, at his grandma's place over a weekend, we'd be there for like 3 days. And we would have, she lived in this like L-shaped house, and we would be in the, like the...
Like a ranch style?
Kind of, yeah. And she'd be off in the, you know, one end of the house, we'd be the other end. We could be up super late to like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. in the morning, just like making whatever and being loud and...
Eating Werther's?
Yeah, kind of. Well, yeah, eating Werther's. Well, we had like some junk candy, you know, some junk food.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like some of the,
you guys egg each other on.
Yeah. And just like, this is like
basically, yes,
here's a stupid idea. And here's another stupid idea. And then just like laughing until we're crying. And
oh, that's awesome.
You know, that's some of the best. That's more satisfying than even performing, I think, is mm-hmm. being able to find someone that you can connect with, mm-hmm. creatively.
Yeah.
And
are there imaginary radio videos?
There's some stuff out there. Yeah. There's some stuff out there.
Yeah, it's so inventive.
Yeah.
I loved that stuff, man. Again, when I was booking my show, I loved being able to book you guys because I'm like, the crowd is, it's going to eat it up.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful transition of just stand up. Now this.
And he comes from a punk background. Like he grew up.
Drennan does?
Yeah, he grew up listening to that.
Oh, wow.
And he was in punk bands.
That's
and,
the thing about fucking California. You don't know. It's the khaki disguise, man. It's like, you don't know.
Well, Bay Area people. Yeah. Like, it was like, I knew all these like suburban, like they're all Mormons. All these kids that were into punk bands early on in Almaden Valley were like Silicon Valley kids were like Mormon, or there was like really, they're really kind of clean cut in a weird way. Yeah,
they're clean cut. It's weird. Where's Drennan from? I don't even know where he's from. Drennan.
Redwood City or something?
Yeah, around there. And then I know he lived in Lake Tahoe for a while.
That makes sense.
Like Palo,
that
like,
doesn't make any sense.
Well, only for Tahoe. Like, I think some of high school and then he,
Interesting. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Did you guys learn anything from this documentary about these guys that was like brand new to you or like jogged your memory? Because I haven't seen this in literally like more than 10 years, maybe 12 years.
It had been about 10 years for me too.
I don't think I learned anything because I've seen it now a few times. So the thing that I like that I even wrote down is how people will go back to Beefheart and the Stooges.
Interesting. I
forgot like about the Beefheart stuff.
Captain Beefheart does. I was listening to Captain Beefheart yesterday with my buddy before we went mm-hmm. to the Kaufman show. He was like, "What do you want to listen to?" And we'd already gotten high, and I was like, "Fucking Captain Beefheart! Like, we're about to go see Andy Kaufman shit. Like, let's fucking do it upright.
That works together. Yeah.
What's
Where's
your favorite
the documentary about him?
There's gotta be one, right?
There is a Captain Beefheart documentary. Yeah, it's really good, actually. Hot Rats. I mean, Shiny Beast is my favorite Captain Beefheart album, and it's his most accessible, so there's going to be Captain Beefheart fans who are going to be like, fuck you!
Wait, what's it called?
Shiny Beasts.
Shiny Beasts.
I thought Trout Mask was like the most accessible, but...
Well, have you listened to Shiny Beasts? Shiny
Beasts
has like Adrian Belew on it. Like, it's got And it's Candle Mambo is like my favorite song from that.
Hmm.
And it's all about watching candle flicker, in the dark.
Oh, that's interesting.
Such a great song. But Hot Rats, the collaboration he did with Zappa.
Right.
Hot Rats is like, Jesus. I mean, I don't know how you can possibly get better than that.
Yeah.
Like, we were listening to that yesterday. Actually, the song Hot Rats in stereo. And I said to my buddy in his car, I'm like, is there something wrong with your heater? Like, what is that noise? And he's like, no, it's just in stereo. And it's someone just taking a spoon over a table. Or it's going like that. I'm like, fucking Zappa, man.
Yeah.
That fucking guy. I love him.
Yeah. Nick, are you a Zappa guy?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have all of his albums, but I definitely like... in high school listened to it, and I'm a fan. We used to play that in Carmo. We used to play St. Alfonso's Pancake Breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Apostrophe.
I played keyboards on that. And
oh, you played that in your band?
Yeah, in the band.
Oh, in Karma, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Zeno Fonzo's pancake breakfast.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it's funny. Yeah, like you guys are both like you both like are music comedy people. I don't like the I don't personally don't know. People ask me
your past.
No. Just like people had said to me when I started doing stand-up, like, are you working at any music? And I'm like, I don't know that the music that I like lends itself to comedy or right. like, it, but I'm sure there is a way to do it. But yeah. that's a part of my brain that I don't access. And like you,
right.
it's not the same as like a Weird Al thing or something,
right.
making a funny song. But like, because what I think is so funny sometimes with you, Nick, is like you'll do like the thing like you're doing Brian Eno, like you're doing right. like a parody that's not at the level of lyrics. It's at the level. It's more conceptual.
Right.
Kind of parody.
Yeah. But, like making fun of Brian Eno is like ambient work.
Yeah.
Like most people probably don't even know what that is really.
Right.
Know, at least like in the, you know, depending on the crowd. But it,
Mills College, it kills.
That's what's appealing to me about, like, I would love to do just a straight stand-up set with no, like, no gear. But I think what's appealing is, like, finding the things that there shouldn't be comedy in or something and and making something funny out of it.
Well, I mean, it's also now your thing. Like, it's something that you don't get to see a lot. So it's you know what the show that you put on, like your bits and stuff, it's so you now, you know. I think it might throw people for a loop if you just did just straight
stand up. Yeah.
I think people would be like, what? Yeah.
I'd be curious.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say like I could see you like doing like maybe like a storytelling show, and that would be like you're kind of in between.
Oh, like, yeah, interesting.
Maybe like something like that you don't normally do, but it's not totally stand up.
Didn't you host? I went to see Outside Land.
We were there.
You're thinking of the Clusterfest show.
Right, is that what you're thinking of?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So does George know what happened at that?
No, I don't know what happened there.
So there was this Comedy Central Festival in San Francisco in June, and I was like freaking out about it. I was like really excited to, you know, host one of the shows. But my gear, like the sound guy had stepped on one of the cords that was going, you know. And so I start my whole act.
Fucking sound guys, dude.
I start my whole act. You know, you guys. I basically go, you guys ready to have some fun? And then I go to hit the button to start this backing track and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And I think the crowd at that point thinks maybe it's like
part of the bit.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to the sound guy. I'm like, is this on? You know? And I think they think it's like a bit. And then like I hit it again and I'm like hitting stuff. And then I'm like, all right, I guess we're going to do some jokes. And so luckily like part of my act has jokes in it.
Right.
But dude, if I didn't have that, it would have been the most awkward. And then
there was only a few hundred people.
There was a good crowd there.
And then
one of the people who run the directors of the festival was there in the back, and they were like upset. Right. Not at me, but at the situation. And yeah. they were like, no, you can go back out and do your bits like after the next act.
Yeah, that always works. Yeah.
So the whole show was like a dance party vibe. Right. I mean, you were there.
I was there, yeah.
And so people didn't even want to see comedy. They just wanted to dance. Yeah,
they wanted to have a party.
It was like an 80s party. And so like these pretty well-established comics are coming out and doing these bits, and they just... The crowd doesn't care until they start singing.
Yeah, right.
You know? And so I come out and like doing my Seinfeld bit or whatever. And like they just did not care. Right. It was a rough one.
I love that Seinfeld bit.
I do too.
You have to go see DJ Reel to see what the Seinfeld.
Yeah,
bit
I try not
is.
To put up my clips of stuff online. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
where are you playing somewhere soon?
Probably.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but did you open for Weird Al?
No, I opened for Devo.
Devo, that's it. Okay.
Yeah. Devo. Oh, nice.
That's fucking awesome.
That was really fun. Like a really amazing.
And that was. That was at the
Saratoga Mountain Winery.
Oh yeah, I've been there. Yeah,
but like the band was so humble and nice, and just like Mark was standing on the side of the stage, like,
that's insane.
Giving, and then afterwards gave me like feedback on my bits. Like I did like the Stairway to Heaven bit.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's like, oh, what if you had a guitar neck that could stretch?
Oh wow. You know? That's fucking funny.
He's writing
then,
for you.
He's like writing for me. And then he watched. I used to do this song called Ugly Mermaid, about a girl with a fishy top and a girly bottom. And and he was like, I really liked that song, but I feel like it was sad. Like, I feel really bad. I feel really bad for the Ugly Mermaid. You know?
Oh my God.
So he was. It was just so cool that he was like,
"That's awesome."
Watching me. He didn't have to. Yeah. He could have been prepping. You know,
yeah, like, going over Whip It Good lyrics.
They were killer too. They were so. This was like 5 years ago.
They're geniuses.
Yeah,
they're out of Ohio too, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't Akron?
I think
Akron or something.
Yeah, that's right.
But you were saying, so you have a show coming up.
Oh, I probably do. I don't know, but you can check out Talkies. Check out, yeah, Talkies is every third Friday at All Out Comedy in Oakland. So you can check that out. You can check out djrealsmells.com, and I have shows listed there. And awesome. I have a new album that came out. Not a new album. It came out last year. Yeah. But, you know, it's on Spotify, and I have a new video.
Wait, what's the album called?
The album's called They'll Say Yes. And when I first started writing music, it's actually, I wrote really short songs when I first started my act, in the vein of like the Minutemen, awesome. Even though that they're not called the Minutemen because they wrote short songs, right. But like, you know,
yeah, yeah.
I think I was inspired by that actually. Yeah. 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 So like all my albums are, the songs are like a minute or less generally.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've never been accused of being a man, but I'd really like to hold your hand. Squeeze into the flesh, make something new. All I've ever wanted was to be a part of you.
Let's play Cast This Doc. You know what we need is music. We need Cast This Doc music. There we go.
Yeah, I wasn't ready.
No, that's fine. I caught you. So we like to.
We gotta cast this doc. Gotta cast this doc.
So we like to do this game where we cast this doc, and you can use any. So it's basically if this doc was made into a biopic, and you can cast anybody basically at any age to play any of the characters. So, George, why don't you go first?
All right. Now, I don't think this works for young George Hurley, but for old George Hurley, I have Michael Rapaport.
Oh.
Interesting.
Not in the voice or anything, just purely just like a physical resemblance.
Mm.
Okay.
His videos are pretty intriguing, Michael Rapaport's.
Yeah.
The stuff he does like in his car. He gets very angry. He's very liberal.
George Hurley doesn't seem to... He's pretty unflappable. He's a cool customer. Yeah. He does look like just like a heavy from like a noir movie, though.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He looks like Sin City. He should be in Sin City.
Yeah.
Frank Miller drew him. Exactly.
Right. Right.
Anybody for D. Boone or George?
I didn't have one. I was trying not to think of just a guy who's kind of a bigger guy. Mm-hmm. And if I could think of like... It's not quite right, you know Vincent D'Onofrio in Full Metal Jacket.
I see
a little bit of that in the intensity, obviously don't really want to.
You cast. I like you cast for like you cast for intent, like intensity, like emotional. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting casting.
Okay. Whereas for Watt, all I got, and this is not, I could not think of a young Watt. You came up with a good one, but for old Watt, Louis Black.
Oh yeah.
Louis Black, huh? Yeah.
It's in some photos, man.
Yeah, he does. There's a resemblance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Even though the
energy is also totally different, the angry energy.
Less Jewy, Mike Watt, maybe. What about you, Nick?
Well, I got young George Hurley, a young Will Ferrell. maybe.
Oh, I see it.
Like
see
with, but curly with, hair. Like with some curly hair, but like he, you know, dyed and then long or whatever.
Uh-huh, I see it a little bit.
Or like a young Michael Richards.
Whoa.
Because he's kind of squirt, like kind of like
the scrawny.
Yeah, kind of scrawny energy. And kind of just like intense kind of energy.
Yeah.
And then Dee Boon, I didn't think of anybody good. Yours that you told me earlier, I like, but Jack Black.
Oh, yeah.
I just, I just, because of how he was jumping around on stage.
Yeah.
That kind of
athletic
energy.
Big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I just saw Jack Black, too, at one of the last Tomorrow shows. Yeah.
Oh, he was there?
Oh,
I wanted to go to that.
It wasn't
man.
The very last one. I couldn't even get into the very last one.
Oh,
but, wow. Jack,
I talked to Jesse
do?
Elias. He was, Jack Black co-hosting. He had a guitar. He just, you know, goofed around with Ron.
Man. I'm so jealous. I wanted to go to that so bad.
Yeah. The very last Tomorrow, I tried to get in there because I live very close by. Could not get let in. I stood even with David Bory and Lance Bangs, and I could not get let in. And
Lance
then I asked Jesse.
No,
it was like there was five people. There was like seven people. It was like David Bory, Lance Bangs, a couple other people, and then M8 was like you, and then you two. Sorry, no room. It was me and another rando. I'm like, all right, I guess that's how it's going. But Jesse Elias said he went on at 5 in the morning, so I think it's okay.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I really wanted to. Ron Lynch is a gem.
Oh, he's, I know.
Yeah, such a gem.
You've done the Tomorrow Show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when he comes to the town, he'll be like, he does a silent film fest. Yeah. He's like the voice of the fest, so he'll be like, why don't you come out and watch a movie and we'll get something to eat. You
know, his that
no
is
one
Lorne
does an
Michaels
impression
too.
Of Ron.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't that. Yeah,
it was a little Lorne Michaels, but
that was more him. Yeah.
His fucking animatronic comedian bit is one
the
of the best
thing,
things.
Yeah.
I can watch him do his act. I've seen it like I feel like 50 to 100 times or something, and it's so amazing. Like, every single time it's like seeing it for the first time.
He did a Tomorrow Show for Sketchfest at Doc's Lab, and I went to see it, and he came up to me, and he's like, "You want to do it?" You
I was on that show.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing the music for it.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, I'd love to. And he's like, just be weird. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an impromptu.
You did a magic act.
Yes, I did a horrible magic act. Nice. Impromptu. So
I got one last one here. Mike Watt, played by a young Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh.
And
I see it.
Without the mustache.
Jaws, Richard Dreyfuss?
Yeah.
Or Close Encounters, Richard Dreyfuss?
Like Close Encounters.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Nice.
I can see that.
Okay, so
Richard with the flannel shirt.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
It's either like a flannel shirt or one of those jumpsuits.
Oh, God.
Jumpsuits were so big in the
mid-80s. I know you're going about to do yours, but there is remind me to tell, there is a Mike Watt jumpsuit story.
Okay. Sure. Okay, so mine for Dee Boon is Donal Logue. Is that how you say his first name?
I would say Donal Logue.
Donal Logue. If you ever seen The Tao of Steve, you'll know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then for early Mike Watt, young Mike Watt, Jimmy Kimmel. I'm thinking Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay. Yeah,
or
I can see
Adam
that.
Sandler.
I could see that.
Like there's a...
Yeah, I could see the Adam Sandler thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then
you
George Hurley.
Hurley.
I didn't really have a Hurley.
Hurley's hard to...
Or did I? I don't think I did. No, I don't think I did. Okay.
There is a Mike Watt story that I think he tells on Marin, but I've also heard it from before that. There's one where he like got diarrhea really bad, and he had one of those jumpsuits on, and he just duct taped the bottom of the jumpsuit, and it just would play a show like with the shits like running down, just like trapped in his jumpsuit pant leg.
Wait, what band?
And then there's another story where he almost died because he got like a septic infection from like an ingrown like chode hair. Like he had some kind of infection on his chode, and because he was like wearing a fucking jumpsuit the whole time, it never got to air out or anything.
There's so gnarly.
This is a guy who wrote the song "Piss Bottle Man."
Yeah,
so right.
He lives the life.
Watt
will respond to if you write Watt an email, he'll probably write you back. He's got a lot of he's got time for his fans.
I would love that.
Yeah,
maybe the four of us can get in. Let's rent. A Econoline van.
Yeah.
Drive down to San Pedro.
Eating only mustard.
Eating only mustard and in a jumpsuit and go fucking talk to that dude.
Yeah, he's got a podcast too. Come to
think does he
of
really?
It. There's a Mike Watt podcast.
Oh,
I have not listened.
Is
to it
called Watt for it?
I think it's called Watt from Pedro.
Oh, okay. So
I should have done way more research before doing this podcast.
That's fine.
We're idiots. It's
you're
fine.
In the sweet. Everything you're in the fine. Sweet. Okay. The all sweet right. spot. You're in your own lane, baby.
I also, Nick. Yeah, thanks. Nick was on our show before, on our live show, playing a character.
Oh, that's right.
You're our first recurring guest.
No, yeah. That actually not our first recurring guest.
Oh, no.
Adam
never mind.
Faller. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Adam okay, from never Lost Weekend.
Mind. All right, George. You know our history better than I do. But you thank know? You so much, buddy.
But am I the first one to do a live show and then do an in-studio show?
No,
well, Adam did a in studio and then did a live show.
Yeah, right. But you were the first one to do live and then in studio.
Yes.
Yeah,
but you were not your you were in character last time. So
that's
this
right.
Is your
that was
first
heavy metal parking
yourself.
Lot.
Yes, that was funny
with Mary Van Note. Yeah, that was fun.
The lovely Mary Van Note. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, sir. This has been a pleasure.
Thanks, George. Shaking your hand. Shaking your
that.
Hand.
High five.
Shaking your hand.
Virtual high five. We'll get our picture. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scoble.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.